Hi, my name is Andy Richter. And I feel just fine about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
Fall is here, hear the yell. Back to school, ring the bell. Brand new shoes, walking blues. Climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there, and welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. It's my little podcast that I really enjoy doing. It's shockingly fun to do this show. I'm really enjoying it, and I'm particularly enjoying it because I'm doing it with some fun people. My trusty assistant, Sona Movsesian.
Hi, Conan.
How are you?
I'm doing very well.
You're acting sort of professional right now. What's going on?
I am a professional business person.
What? What are you talking about?
I don't know.
Why are you trying to be
prim?
Like,
I don't know.
Okay.
I thought maybe if I just, you know, acted...
Fake it till you make it.
More mature, you wouldn't shit on me.
I don't think I do that,
Sona. Is that possible?
I really don't.
Oh, come on.
I don't. First of all, because we heard his voice creep in, I think he should be introduced as well. He's a podcaster extraordinaire. Mr. Matt Gourley, how are you?
Hello, Mr. O'Brien.
What is your official title again?
I believe I'm a producer.
But are you a producer? Are you
the producer.
You're the producer.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, and you are responsible, you have like 9 other podcasts, don't you? Seriously.
Not at any given time, but over life, sure, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
But you've made hundreds of podcasts.
Yes.
Different kinds.
Certainly.
You're like Kung Fu, you just wander the West, a stranger making podcasts. And,
sadly, yeah.
No, that's not sad, that's very neat.
It's a little sad.
Do you think, cool. Matt, Sona just said something that disturbed me, because I do love Sona, we've been together a long time. And she said that, what was, in your words,
I said you shit on me.
I do not. I really don't think I do.
Well, at risk at getting rid of this goodwill you seem to have for me right now, you do. You shit all over her.
Yeah. What are you talking
Thank
about?
Thank you.
Yeah.
And you shit on Matt, too.
Yeah,
you
not
shit
true.
On both of us.
That is not true.
It's a shit fest.
Stop it, please. Yeah. I'm asking.
We're shit catchers.
If anyone out there thinks this is true, they would be phoning in right now, and they're not.
Phone in here.
None of the lights are
lighted. You pulled the phones from.
I see no lights going off.
I don't think that's how podcasts work.
I heard you yelling in the studio, I want no goddamn phones within 100 yards of
I'm looking at the switchboard right now. No calls coming in of confirmation.
Switchboard.
I think I've been quite supportive of both of you. I think sometimes, like any person who's operating at my level, with so many different gears turning, so many plates spinning, so many different synapses firing at once, making jokes, but at the same time solving complex quadratic equations, I sometimes probably become a little impatient. And if I do, then I apologize.
Oh.
Yeah. No, not to you two. To anyone who has to listen to it. Sona, I care for you, and if you feel that I've been unjust to you...
I care for you.
I care for you. I've been programmed to care for you.
Oh, no, I know it's out of love. It's like when my brother used to beat me up. My mom would be like, oh, it's because he loves you.
That's Your brother just... beat you up?
Yeah, he was my brother. He beat me up.
This is Danny.
Danny, my brother, used to, you know, he was...
He didn't beat you up. He used to just probably wrestle you.
He didn't, like, bruise and batter me, but he beat me up like a sibling beats up their sibling.
I never struck any of my siblings.
I find that very hard to believe.
Yeah, it wasn't true at all. It was a constant flying fist in my house. Constant.
There were four boys in your family.
Four boys and two girls that know how to fight.
Oh.
And my grandmother knew how to fight. She lived with us.
What?
Yeah, she used to break the leg off a chair and just start wailing on us.
Oh, no.
True story. Yeah, and then my dad would come in the room and he'd say, I want a piece of this, and he'd go at it. And then my mom would come down the chimney, dressed as Santa for reasons you still don't understand, because it was August, and she'd start swinging a chain around. She used to have a big chain that she would swing.
Everyone had weapons.
We were called the Fightin' O'Briens, yeah. People would walk by our house and just hear smash, crash, bash,
and that was just the sounds you were making from your mouth.
Oh yeah, we were all just lying quietly on the rug going smash, bash, crash. No one was actually, I bruise very easily. Yeah, tough times for me growing up. Big family, a lot of love, but a lot of fighting.
Yeah.
Gourley, how many siblings? What?
Originally one, and then two more came along in a second marriage.
Okay.
Yeah, not mine.
What's that?
Not Wait, what?
No, I didn't think you could get more siblings if you... What?
Well, it's what hard to explain. About? It's hard to explain. We do little things a little differently at the Gourley household.
It's so weird. Gourley got married a second time, and then he got some other brothers. What?
How does
that
true.
Work? Where are you from? What's your story, man?
You wouldn't be able to comprehend it.
No, probably not.
It's nice.
I'm excited because we got a special guest today.
Mm-hmm.
This is a gentleman who I've known for 26 years.
Wow.
He's been by my side through many of the highs and lows of a show business career that defies explanation. He's got his own podcast now that's debuting.
Ooh, you're a trendsetter.
Yes, called The Three Questions with Andy Richter. And the first episode is out today. Andy's one of the funniest people I've ever met, consistently funny. Fascinating guy, a terrific mind. This would be a podcast I would listen to if I wasn't already listening to it because he's my friend. Find it on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts, wherever store you buy them, whatever Fresh Market's getting you your podcasts. Get The Three Questions with Andy Richter. As again, first episode out today. And then I think it's going to air on Tuesdays. That's when it's going to drop. So, Andy. Thanks for being here. Man, if people could see the face you made just now, like a petulant child.
It's fine. No, I mean, I already am your friend. I mean, what I feel, that's like, it's like asking me how I feel about being Caucasian.
Right.
Fine.
Well, how do you feel about being Caucasian? Actually,
it's fine.
It's fine.
It's fine.
It's got its problems.
Yeah. I mean, we are a virus on the face of the earth, us white people, but you know, we're fine.
Yeah. We're building up the earth's immune system.
Sure we are.
I think that's an interesting place to start because every now and then over the years, and it's been 26 years now that I've known you, you and I will be someplace together or be walking down the street together or be, and I see the look on people's faces. It's like if Herman Munster and Grandpa went someplace together in full costume.
Yep.
People have this very funny reaction and they, I think in their minds, I know in the early days, like in the 90s, I do think people thought that, you know, we were so new on the scene and so seemingly out of place. I think our fans back in 93, 94 thought that you and I finished the show and went home to an apartment and slept in a bunk bed for two.
That's right.
You know, I took the top or the bottom, whatever, and we snored in sequence like the Three Stooges. That was sort of the feeling at the time.
Yeah, and I think for years and years, what I would always hear was, hey, where's Conan?
Right.
I'd be like, I don't know, his house probably? You know, home with his family?
We are adults.
Yeah. And I think people, and you've said that people have said that to
yes,
you.
Yes, people would say, where's
too.
Andy?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Although walking around with you is like, you know, you, in terms of like being noticeable, you're like a Mardi Gras parade float. Because there have been times when we've been walking around together, and people will come up and want to take a picture, and they're like, I love the show. I watch it all the time. And they just, like, hand me their phone to take the picture. And I just don't think it's – and I don't think that they're being rude or that they're lying about watching the show. I just don't think that they register, like, me as some – you know, all they can see is you.
I have yeah, I don't know if it's the hair or there's something.
It's all of it.
It's all of it.
Yeah.
The fact that I'm a very flamboyant dresser.
Right.
When I go out in public.
Right.
I dress.
And that big arrow that you carry that says Conan O'Brien here.
That points to me.
Points at your head.
Points to my head.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something about that. It's funny because, I mean, I'll take us back to the beginning because it does fascinate me that it's been this long. I remember meeting you when I was looking for, I got the late night gig. Robert Smigel and I were looking for writers and I met you and I look at pictures. You're a couple of years younger than I am, but at the time I was, had just turned 30 and you were like 25.
When was that? It was 93?
Yeah.
So yeah, 27.
Oh, okay. Anyway, when I look at those photos now of you at that age, we both look like children.
Yes.
But you look much, much younger than me.
Yeah.
And at the time I met you, you'd just done, I think, Cabin Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Was a movie that you had been in with Chris Elliott,
yeah.
But that was the only kind of legitimate thing that you had done.
I'd done one other cable movie. I did one scene in a cable movie, which is the first thing that I'd done. And then I'd done stage stuff. But
right.
Yeah, no, but not like, yeah, not movie or TV or anything
right.
like that.
And so what's interesting is I meet you and I immediately right away, we just clicked and I thought we've got to get this guy on the show. And I told that to Robert Smigel.
Yeah.
We just need to hire Andy Richter. I love Andy Richter. We got to hire him right away. He's perfect for the show. I was not saying specifically, no one at the time thought you'd be doing anything every night on camera, but it was just like, we got to get this guy in there. We don't have any writers yet, maybe one or two, but we've got to get Andy Richter on board. And Robert Smigel said, well, we need to see his packet first of material. And I remember thinking, I don't care about this packet. He's just really, really so funny. And all of your personality came out. We just went to a deli and hung out together for really not that long. And I thought, just at a very gut level, we've got to get this guy on board.
No, we understood. We're from the same tribe, you know, like just in terms of like silliness and stupidity and stuff. And there are people that I've met throughout my life that have been like, and you were definitely one of those where it's like, oh yeah, I know this guy.
Yes.
Like, and I can be as absolutely stupid as I want to be and he will love it.
Yes.
Know? Yeah.
You used to do a thing routinely whenever the lights would dim in the studio or go out for a second, just even when we were working on something and the lights would just go down for a second and then come back on again, you'd go, my pearls! That always killed me because it's such a 1930s,
yes, yes.
It's a 1930s trope that when the lights go out and then go back
somebody
on again,
steals pearls.
A woman's pearls are gone.
Yeah.
And you and another writer on the show, Tommy Blacha, who is a friend of yours, who
yes.
you brought on board, brilliant writer, one of the great writers of on our show's history, you two had the two filthiest, I'm trying to put it the right way, you had an understanding and a facility with scatology.
Sure.
That just blew my mind.
That's right.
And since then, I've been in situations later on where people would say, well, okay, this guy, watch out. You know, he gets pretty blue with him.
You
can
yeah.
go kind of over the edge and be like, no.
Mm-mm.
No, I've spent years with Andy Richter. There's not a thing you can say
no.
that I haven't heard.
It's always kills me like when they'll be like, oh, that new Tim Burton movie is dark. And I'll be like, that is not fucking dark.
Right.
Like, you know, like threatening to shit in someone's mouth. That's dark. You know,
oh
I mean,
God.
You know, but I mean, but it's also too, I don't.
Also, if
yeah.
you shit in someone's mouth, you need their cooperation.
Or a sedative.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Got it.
A sedative and some sort of pry, you know, some sort of method to keep it pried open. And also, quite frankly, muscle control.
That's true.
It's not unless the person's got a huge mouth.
Oh, my God.
See?
No, it's true.
What is happening?
Andy's bringing up.
I'm demonstrating what
Andy's
talking about.
Andy's bringing up a really good point that if you're going to defecate into someone's mouth.
Right.
There's thought and imagination that has to go into it. And Andy's put in the work and
yeah.
the planning.
Okay.
No, I mean, it's like, you give me a job, I'm going to figure out how to do it. No, actually, I mean, quite seriously, there's nothing funnier than the human body. There's nothing funnier than we all walk around thinking that we have some form of dignity when we're basically oozing stuff all the time.
Right.
That, like, the best times that you spend are when you're like either stuffing something in your face or like, you know, like exchanging fluids with somebody. That's like what life is. It's all greasy and messy and fantastic. And the fact that we walk around like, oh, you know, like that's above me.
Right. It makes you think
yeah.
of Pierce Brosnan in a different way.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Right.
Suddenly, whenever you see Pierce Brosnan wearing like a really well-coiffed, you know,
right.
haircut and with a really nice suit, and you're like, ah, you're just ooze. You're just a bunch of ooze.
You know, my
you
friend.
You were oozing last night, and you'll ooze tomorrow.
My friend Tim Long, who was a writer on The Simpsons.
Right.
He said this one thing once, and I I don't know why it's so fascinating to me, but or why I love it so much, but it sort of demonstrates this. He said that, like, even like at least once a week, even the Queen of England gets her own shit on her hand. And it's like, yeah, that's probably true. I mean, we all get our own shit on our hands, and then, you know, it's just like a fact of life. And the fucking Queen of England is, oh, no. Corn, when did I have corn?
When did I have corn?
When did I have corn?
Can we say that story?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, this was
this is a famous old story.
Famous story.
This is, yeah.
Well, you go.
It's a camp legend. It's a camp legend.
It's a camp legend at our show.
Yes.
And now let the lawsuits fly. But Andy, why don't you go? It's Brian McCann.
Brian McCann had a friend who was—
Another great writer for our show and performer for many
years.
He's
Minty, the candy cane, and the coconut guy. I don't remember.
He played a million guys. Yeah.
So Brian McCann had a friend, or his wife had a friend, who was a dancer in the touring company of Hello Dolly when— Carol Channing was in the show.
Right.
And the one story that he did have is that, like, there was a point in the show where all the dancers come and then they have a little set, like, move that they do. They come in a circle and they, in a line, kind of do a little dance. And apparently one show, this guy, Brett, did, like, a little extra English on his dance thing.
Yep.
And after the show, they said, Carol wants to talk to you. And he went into her dressing room. She said, Brett, what's the name of this show? And he said, Hello, Dolly. And she said, that's right. It's not Hello, Brett. And so he knew, like, okay, I can't do that again.
Right.
And then he just got bored one time and he did the same thing where he got like an extra laugh out of some sort of dance move. And she called him in again, and she's like, what's the name of this show? And he's like, Hello, Dolly. She goes, that's right. You're fired. And she fired him.
Okay.
That's the McCann-specific version.
Yes.
This other story.
Here we go.
I don't remember if it was McCann, but it is lore, especially like among – it's a very camp story. It's a very gay story, and every gay person knows this story as far as I know. Carol Channing, supposedly someone in the show – They're at a touring theater where the bathroom for the rest of the cast doesn't work. And Carol, who apparently was a very generous and lovely person in many ways, said, well, they can just use my bathroom.
Right. We'll share it.
So, yeah. So I guess it was in her dressing room and somebody was in there and Carol came in and she's the story of the version I heard is that she comes in and she's like slamming and was like, God damn it, you bitch. They're like angry. So this person just like silently picked up their legs in the stall that they were in.
Right.
And
there's two stalls.
There's two stalls. And they just decided to be quiet. And Carol Channing went into the other stall, let her rip.
then got
up and went like, and the person heard, corn? When did I have corn?
Okay, so.
Now, who knows if it's true?
Okay,
I do not want to be sued by the estate of Carol Channing.
So first of all, so that story gets told, and then it's the writer's room. So that's just where we start.
Right.
So then we started riffing around. It turned into, what if it was a special production of Hello, Dolly? Where she sings, Hello, Dolly. And then she can fire herself across the room on a stream of high-powered corn.
Yeah.
And the crowd would go, oh, and applaud. And it was like, see the great corn rendition, the flying corn rendition.
Traverse the stage on a stream of shit.
Oh, my God.
If that was the kind of stuff we could have done, we'd still have the Tonight Show.
Yeah.
And
America would be a better place.
Yeah.
God, you also have this ability, this crazy eerie ability to, I don't even think you're, I think you're fine with your tech savvy, but when it came to putting something insane and upsetting on someone else's computer,
you were
able to go, stuff we're not allowed to do anymore.
No.
But of course, this was a different time,
kids. It was a different time, and it was, and I don't think I think it was always to men. I never did this.
No, you always did it to men.
It was the more uptight people, like Brian Kiley, who's a hilarious writer who's been one of our monologue people. But he's very Irish Catholic uptight.
Yeah.
You know,
Brian makes me look like Hugh Hefner.
Yeah, yeah. So I just would like, and these were fairly early days in the internet, you know, like it wasn't.
Yeah, you were a pioneer.
Yeah. I mean, I just, but also too, of course, like within the first minute that, you know, of this new technology being born, it's just like, well, can we see pictures, naked people and fucking? Like, yeah, yeah, sure, sure, sure. So around the office, that was like when we, it was my first exposure to the internet on a regular basis there, I think. Of any like office area that I worked at, but there was lots of porn and like Jordan Schlansky. Let's talk about porno. Jordan Schlansky was in an office. He shared an office with.
He's an associate
people.
Producer on our
yeah,
show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I mean, everybody knows who he is. But he set it up so that his computer faced away from the door, and he'd be at his desk. And I'd stick my head in and say hi or something. He'd go like, "Hey, come here and come see this." And I would come around the corner, and I learned quickly, don't go – when he says this, don't do this. Because I would come around the corner just in time to see just a nude lower third of a body in rubber pants filling it up with shit.
Oh, my God.
Somehow filling up like rubber pants with just an incredible volume of shit. And he'd be like, how about that, huh?
Right.
I'm like, fuck you, man. I'm not going to do that anymore.
Oh, now,
not anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, my rubber pants phase is over.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's, no, but you –
But I would find like usually big hairy men having sex and put it on Brian Kiley's computer. And I just got to where I could do it. And I would put it as a screensaver so that when he would – and he, I don't think he really had a good idea how to not get it. But I could do it very quickly. So he'd get up for just a second and I'd be in that room hanging out talking or something. And he'd get up for just a second and he'd leave his computer unlocked. And so I just could quickly like Google – I don't know if it was even Google at the time, but you know, maybe Excite or Yahoo and look up just like bears, you know, which is like gay men, like bears sex.
Right.
And then quickly just find like, you know, a big hairy butthole getting pounded and put it up on his – as his screensaver. And
right.
It was, you know, it's the kind of fun you had back in 94.
Back in 94, those were the – that was what people did.
Yes.
That's what – and to be fair, everyone did it.
Yes.
I mean,
is true.
In every walk of life did it.
Yep. Ted Kennedy used to do that all the time. Yep. Mother Teresa.
So it's so funny because looking back on it, people experience a show one way. They're watching it at home or at night or late at night, or they're stoned and they're watching this weird late night show. But then I think it's people refer to them as kind of Larry Sanders moments where what really happens, what's going on there. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I've told people over the years is that in the commercial breaks, because you're seated to the right of the person, if you know, you're seated to the other side of the person and you're seated slightly back, the commercial break would start. We don't talk about this anymore. I haven't done it in years.
Yeah, yeah.
But the music would kick in and I'd thank the guest and the guest would get up and leave and you'd move back to the seat next to me and you'd lean over and tell me exactly what kind of plastic surgery they had had because you had this angle on their faces.
Yeah.
Again, I don't want to give names of people.
It's gotten better.
But you used to say
– plastic surgery's gotten much better over the years. But you used to be able to see – it was all neck scars. It was like neck scars and – yeah.
You told me about a person who will go unnamed who had so the face pulled back so many times. It was a man. Face pulled back so many times that you saw the hair from the sideburns went behind the ear.
I had heard.
And you leaned forward, and this is a very famous person, and you leaned forward, and the music's playing, and I say, thanks a lot, famous person, and they leave, and it's, and he leans over and went, okay, all right. And I lean in, I go, what? And you're like, okay. The face is pulled back so far that the sideburns are behind the ear.
It was beard. It was beard from underneath the chin.
Yeah,
from underneath. He had to shave behind his ears.
Yeah.
Because whiskers grew behind his ears.
Yes. And I remember that just being this, like, who knows? There's this whole other world that nobody knows about that's happening on this show.
And I had heard that. I had heard somebody told, I don't know, I have any idea where, but somebody said, he's had a facelift and his beard grows behind his ears now. So when he was on the show, I certainly was like, all right, let's check this out, you know? And it was 100% true. But I mean, there were people too. There were like old fucking men with like you, where you could see like right in the back, like the hairline at the top of your neck, like where the hair comes down. Just like obvious scars, like from getting
repeated.
You know, yeah, like facelifts. And it's like, oh, Jesus Christ. But I don't know.
You
know,
this all stuff will
do
be
all
done.
His own. I don't know.
I want to lose weight,
and I have been thinking about maybe some sort of waddle surgery. Or
you want a waddle added? What do you want?
No, no, I wouldn't. I don't know. As I get older, like if the waddle gets too big, I might have that reduced. Or I probably almost assuredly at some point, because I have lost a fair amount of weight and I plan on keeping it off. I said this on the show once. I will get the fat sucked out of my tits. That is something I like. Yeah. I mean, it would be great to not have these big fucking tits.
So your man boobs.
No, they're tits. Whatever, yeah.
Okay, so you're going to have the fat sucked out of them.
Yeah. Well, because you asked me once, I had sinus surgery, and you accused me in like a joking way that I had had a nose job.
Right.
And I said, why would I bother? I said, my nose is fine. If I was going to do anything, I'd get the fat sucked out of my tits. And
would this be something you'd be willing for us to film?
Fuck yeah. If it gets paid for.
Well, no.
I'm not paying for it if you're going to film it.
Well, no, I think if you're going to get the surgery anyway, and you're getting paid to work here on the show, I think we should get to film it, but you still have to pay.
No.
Sona, can you jump in
that
here?
That doesn't make any sense.
Sona, you should step out. You shouldn't be in this.
Listen.
Gourley, when I jump in here for a second?
Doesn't make any sense.
Gourley, you're out.
Yeah. I'm no Schlansky. You can't strong arm me into something.
I've always wondered what would happen. I have this perverse that if I went, let's say we had like 3 weeks off in the summer or something, and I went and got radical, like things pulled back in this radical way.
Yeah.
And came back and it was just painful to look at. Yeah, and I looked very different. I think most people wouldn't say anything. Most people working here, I know that you right away, well, you wouldn't say anything, Sona, because you'd be the one that drove me to Phoenix, Arizona for the giant face fry.
Yeah.
But, I think out of politeness, there's a lot of people who work here who probably be like, they'd be talking behind my back for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I know you'd go right up to me and go, what the fuck did you do?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd say, I did nothing. I just went out in the sun, that's all.
Yeah.
Little lizard tongue.
What, we worked with someone.
Yes, we did.
What was the cover story? We knew someone.
We knew
who had
someone.
Surgery, and their cover story for their very obvious surgery was, and I don't remember exactly.
They came back and they had obvious facial surgery, and they said that they were injured playing softball. Oh. And we were all just like, please don't say anything. Yeah. You don't have to say anything.
As far as I know, playing softball never turned someone Asian for a few months.
So anyway, that happened.
Oh well, we should mention mine.
Yeah, so I was gonna.
Should we not talk about my podcast?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's do that. Yeah, why don't I?
Because that's why I'm here. Yeah. I mean, I we don't speak otherwise.
Andy and
I have
not spoken. We go through through managers and lawyers.
You've called me Randy like 4 times in the last month.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I mean,
Mandy.
I did have an erection at the time, so maybe that was it.
That's how I covered it.
Yeah. So I got a podcast of my own coming out.
Yeah.
On this same cartel. Entertainment cartel. And it actually, anyone listening to this, you can go listen to the first one right away. My first guest is...
I know who your first guest is. It's Carol Channing's lawyer.
It's Carol Channing's ghost.
How dare you? How dare you? I'm going to haunt your toilet.
Your toilet.
When did I have corn?
But yes, so my... The podcast I'm doing... And I kind of, although I don't really want this to get out, but I mean, no one's listening to this, but I just really want to trick people into having like a little mini therapy session.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
An incredibly like, you know, like unprincipled therapy session. Like, who the fuck am I to have a therapy session with
you? You want them to have a therapy session with an unlicensed.
Precisely.
Dangerously medicated therapist.
I want to get in there. I want to lift the lid on their skull, stir around in there and fuck it all up. So I just tried to think of a gimmick to be able to talk about those kind of topics. And so it's called The Three Questions. And the three questions are, where do you come from? Where are you going? And what have you learned? Number one, people are terrified to have to talk about themselves in any kind of philosophical, emotional way. But at least they know what they're in for, and it's kind of good to get them talking about stuff that isn't what they might normally talk about, which is plugging a project or something.
So who have you talked to so far?
I have talked to Natasha Lyonne, Lauren Bouchard, who is the creator of Bob's Burgers, Baron Vaughn, Nicole Byer, Amy Sedaris, Ron Funches. And I mean, for me, it's like, it's just, like I say, it's like I'm only doing it because I'm interested in talking to these people about this stuff. And I'm only talking to people I'm interested in talking to. Like, there have been people that they've pitched to me and I'm like, no thanks. That sounds boring.
I don't want to talk to former President Barack Obama.
Yawn. That guy's slow.
Yeah, that's what they always say about Obama. Yeah.
So today it's out on a Monday. Then after that, it will be available on Tuesdays.
So it drops. That's what the kids say.
Yes.
It'll drop.
It drops like a turd on Tuesdays. Think that. Turd Tuesdays. That's how a mnemonic device for the kids out there. Turd Tuesday.
Mnemonic. I listen to it and
judge it harshly.
I'll be very judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
I'll probably ask, since it's through my company, if we can insert just audio clips of me
cackling
maniacally. Well, this is very strange to finish a show with you, then come upstairs, do a podcast with you. I'll see you tomorrow.
Yes.
You probably are haunted by me at night.
No.
My big Irish head.
No. The minute I'm out of here, I don't even remember who the hell you are. What you look like.
You're out fast, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're out of this.
I am. I am out of here fast. I do. I pride myself on, I don't know if I pride myself, but
as the show's ending, you can hear Andy's car start.
There are times when, especially because we will occasionally have a taped piece that we show to an audience after the show, just to kind of get a sense of where the laughs are.
Yep.
I have been a number of times when I am driving before the audience has left this. I'm driving out of here before the audience has left
the studio. The audience can see your Dodge minivan.
Yeah. Well, I drive through the studio honking while they're watching the video.
See you, suckers.
Fuck you. So it's like I started to not stay till 10:30 at night. I'd go home at 8 p.m.
Put avocado slices on your, or what is it, cucumber slices?
I would.
The cliche?
The cucumber slices.
Avocado. I've been putting avocado on my eyes.
Oh, no, you've been doing it wrong.
Oh, because I wake up and
whole avocado.
Whole avocado is just sitting on each eye.
That's such a bad idea. It's cucumber slices.
Oh, I wish I'd talked to somebody.
Silly.
Oh, well.
They bring those poolside at the Four Seasons, I think.
And put them on your eyes?
Yeah, I think they do. I think they bring icy cucumber slices.
I'm banned from the Four Seasons. Well. One goddamn diatribe.
And those people had it coming.
Oh, they sure did. They sure did.
They sure did.
All right, well, Andy Richter.
Thank you for having me.
The name of the show is?
The Three Questions with Andy Richter.
The Three Questions with Andy Richter. Check it out today, and then it's going to drop on Tuesdays.
Oh, yeah, dropping.
Dropping like turds. Turd Tuesday.
Turd Tuesday.
Peace out.
Bye.
All right, we're going to check in with some listeners who've left messages for us. Maybe I can hear their concerns, thoughts.
Let's do it. Will, if you wouldn't mind, play number 15.
15.
Hi, my name's Joe, and I live in Hamilton, Canada. And I wanted to say how much I love Sona. I think she's funny. I think she's smart.
Aww.
I love when she sassed you in the Gigolo's mug bit back in 2013. and she has the best earrings. And my question for Conan is, you give Sona a really hard time about her job, but can you tell us a story of when she, like, really saved your ass? And just like went above and beyond. Love the podcast. Thank you so much, guys. Bye.
I like her.
That's really sweet. Joe from Hamilton, Canada.
I like you, Joe.
That's a very nice stuff that you said about Sona, and your question is a really sweet and great question, and no.
What?
No, I can't. I can't think of one time that Sona's truly saved the day. I'll be honest with you, there have been countless times.
I was going to say that.
Yeah, I know. I was going to do it for you. You didn't trust me to actually do it?
No, I thought you were going to do a thing, and I was going to say there's too many. Ugh, don't Sorry. Sneeze. There's, ugh.
God, sorry, I got a cold coming back from Ghana.
It's gross.
I told you I'm not well.
I know, your germs are all over the place.
No, I'm going that way, and I'm taking care of it. Don't worry. Always get sick. I work really hard.
It's just a mist of it.
I know, we're all on the mist. We're all going to get sick because of this.
No, I've had it for a while. Go ahead.
I really do think there's a lot of times. I am actually, listen, I know you make jokes, but I know I'm good at my job. I don't need you to tell me that I'm good at my job because I know that I am.
I think you said it several times because you're insecure about whether or not you are good at your job.
I am.
I think, I'll say this. I think that when the chips are down, you rise to the occasion and you do incredible things. I will say that. You can do anything when you put your mind to it. And there have been many times where the chips have been down and you've risen to the occasion and you've done heroic duty. I think when things kind of settle down, maybe you let things fall through the cracks because what the heck, you only, you know, right?
I guess.
Is that a fair assessment?
I think I do a good job, especially when it matters. And I think generally speaking, I'm good at what I do.
Yeah. And then there are times.
No, not really.
I'm taking, you know what I love? I'm taking a question about list the times when Sona's really saved the day, and I'm steering it towards the times that you really have.
Yeah. I know, I can see what you're doing.
And I'm good at it.
But
No, you do a great job. I think there have been times where, I've been ill, and you've jumped into action and managed to find me medicines and stuff when we're like in a foreign country.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I think you've done that several times.
When we travel, I'm really on it.
Yeah, we'll be in a foreign country and I'll just, be under the weather or need some kind of medication or something. And you'll disappear into the streets of Cairo and come back with this amazing potion that saves the day.
Yeah, but when you do get to a point in your life when you're much older and you can't take care of yourself, I will not stick around.
You are.
No.
You are going to carry me to the toilet.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
No, that's not happening.
Yes, you will.
The moment you cannot physically take care of yourself, I am out of here.
You will carry me to the toilet in 2 years.
No.
In 2 years, you will carry me to the toilet because I will have reached a certain age. Well, actually, it won't be my age so much as my attitude.
Oh,
I just will become
just willful.
It'll just be will. It's called willful incontinence. I'm just going to decide. I'm just going to decide. I've done enough in life. Enough of me walking to the toilet. Sona, carry me.
No, I won't do that.
Can you think of any specific examples of when you really saved the day?
So speaking of that, of you taking care of him and bringing food and medicine, let's play voicemail 24. Well,
hey, Conan, this is Sean. I want to know, what is your favorite Armenian food? Thanks. Love the podcast.
Hey, Sean, I'm glad you're enjoying the podcast. We took a trip to Armenia, Sona and I. It's one of the travel specials that we shot. We had a really great time. I remember they have a lot of dried fruit.
Yeah.
That's very good.
Dried apricot.
Dried apricot. And then is it pomegranate?
Mm.
Dried crushed, or is it dried pomegranate?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You don't know?
I don't.
Well.
You could just say dried fruit.
It's basically, they make really good fruit roll-ups.
Yeah.
Ooh,
and they've been making them for like 7,000 years.
Mm-hmm. There's like nuts in them and they're smashed. But also there's just a lot of kebabs.
A lot of kebabs.
A lot of barbecue.
Yeah. I would say the grilled meats, the kebabs they made might be the best.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the kebabs and I liked the dried fruit. The only thing that I did notice is that after a while, people kept presenting me with rolled up dried fruit. It was really great. And then I remembered one guy saying, "Have I got something for you?" And he made me walk like 600 yards and go up a long staircase and go through into different rooms. And then he finally led me to
a room that had some dried fruit in it. And I didn't have the heart to tell him, you're the 700th person to give me dried fruit.
A lot of, yeah. And there's a lot of meat in there. I mean, my grandpa was a butcher since he was 12. And
now, some people say my grandpa was a butcher and it means their grandpa was a horrible murderer.
No.
Yeah. Like my grandfather was a butcher. But, I mean, he really was a butcher.
He murdered.
Oh, he murdered indiscriminately until he was overpowered by the constables. but yours was a legitimate butcher.
He may have murdered. But no, but Dede was an actual butcher.
Yeah, he was an actual butcher who may or may not have murdered outside of his job.
What do you call
maybe.
Him?
Dede?
Dede.
Dede.
Dede. Yaya and Dede.
Yaya and Dede. Where have you been, man? It's not yes. Grandpapa and grandmother.
No.
Yes.
No. Grandma and grandpa.
Yeah, right. In your home, grandma and grandpa. Now, grandmother and grandpapa. I'm here with my feather duster to get the...
Yeah, where is this going?
I'm here with my feather duster to wipe off your oil portraits. I hope I inherit them one day.
I do.
And live up to the great name of Gourley.
And I fell off a cliff.
Yeah, you always fall off a cliff at the end of the episode. But no, you call it's Dede.
Dede. And when we were young, I just remember going to his house and he had a skinned lamb.
Whoa.
On a spit in the backyard.
Yeah.
And we.
Like eyeballs still intact?
The whole thing. There.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. His boss. Mm. And it was in the backyard in like their house in Van Nuys.
Did you say it was boss?
It was
pretty boss.
Wow. Yeah.
It was cool. It's pretty cool to have a Dede, if you will.
Yeah.
Who can skin a calf.
Yeah.
Or a sheep or a goat. What was the strangest thing you ever saw him skin?
It's not like I was in his butcher shop watching him skin animals. No, I don't.
But what do you do with the skins?
I have no idea.
Isn't it true that you kids used to put them on sometimes and run around the neighborhood?
Put on skins on
Halloween,
dead animals?
Yeah.
Leatherface.
And run around the neighborhood in Los Angeles?
Yeah, and saying, look at me, I'm a lamb. Boo, I'm a lamb. That's what you on Halloween. Oh, here comes some kids. Whoa, kid, what are you wearing? Boo, I'm a baby lamb. Now give me some raisinettes.
That's weird.
I know. I like I said, I just got off a flight. I'm feeling a little out of it.
Yeah.
What did you dress up as for Halloween when you were a kid?
I remembered once my mom, and she meant well, but you know when you're little, they go off and they get you, you know, there was the plastic mask.
Oh, yeah.
And the sort of apron-y.
The vinyl.
Nylon thing you'd put on.
Those had a name.
And so if you were Captain America, if you were Spider-Man, it would be a plastic Spider-Man mask and then just a tie-on smock that sort of evoked the Spider-Man.
Yeah, it wasn't
costume.
The costume. It was like a picture of Spider-Man on your chest.
Whatever.
Yeah.
It was all kind of... Those were costumes back in the day.
Yeah.
And I know my mom once, she was responsible for getting us our Halloween costumes because we were just kids. She picked them out pretty arbitrarily and she gave me mine and it was Uncle Sam. And let me point out, it was Uncle Sam at like the height of Vietnam... Vietnam War, Watergate, disillusionment with government. And I remembered walking around the neighborhood.
You might as well have gone as Barry Goldwater.
I know.
Oh, God.
I went around as the symbol of everything people had lost hope in. And my poor mom. Of course,
God.
I bitched about it, and I just thought, you know, she had six kids.
What
and
were the other kids that year? So who was this whole gang? I want to picture the whole gang.
I don't remember. I think Luke was Nixon. Neil was Haldeman. Justin was Ehrlichman. Kate was Jimmy Hoffa. It was a rough time.
I would have killed to see that.
Yeah, it was rough all around. But yeah, that was me back in the day.
Mm. All right. Well, we've talked about Armenian food. We've talked about nice things Sona did and Uncle Sam. That's all the things you need to cover in a podcast, I think.
I think we have touched on, if you listen to this podcast again carefully, you'll realize that there's a touchstone for every major issue it's ever faced humanity, and every emotion that's ever been felt.
That's right.
This is basically the canon of all of Shakespeare's works in this one podcast today. But you have to listen very carefully for all the themes we touch on.
Yeah, they're there. I want to see you in that costume so bad.
Uncle Sam, yeah.
Did you have a little, a white tufty beard on the mask?
No, it was made of plastic. The whole thing was a molded plastic Uncle Sam face with the little white beard and then an Uncle Sam, and I think I had an American flag, a smock, and then an American flag to like wave around. And I was walking around the streets literally while people in the background were burning their draft cards.
And you have to picture these costumes. They were like culottes. They only went down to your shins.
Yeah.
They weren't full length.
No.
But they were a onesie, like a
plastic. Yeah, and I misunderstood.
Onesie.
I was completely naked underneath. It was like a surgical gown, so you could see my ass.
Now that's America.
You could see, it looked like Uncle Sam on his way to a colonoscopy. So it was a rough time for me and for America. But you know what? We both got through it. We both flourished. And we've both never been better off than we are now.
Make America great again.
Why did you make it political?
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, with Sonam Ovsesian and Conan O'Brien as himself. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Chris Bannon and Colin Anderson at Earwolf. Special thanks to Jack White for the theme song. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and the show is engineered by Will Beckton. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review featured on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.